Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, coming to you from Tennis Podcast Towers, Indian Wells, where our women's singles final lineup is set, and tantalizingly, it will be a repeat of quite possibly the match of the year so far, the Australian Open final between Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina. Can I have a yes, please?
Oh, yeah.
You sure can. Yes, please.
And with all due respect to Maria Sakkari, at the point that Aryna Sabalenka booked her spot in the final by virtue of a competitive but convincing straight sets victory, I think, we were then at the stage where I think we knew we were guaranteed a pretty epic final. Sabalenka Świątek, yes please. Sabalenka Rybakina, yes please. So that was a good place to be. I don't think any of us quite expected what we ended up seeing tonight, a match that finished not long ago on our screens here at Tennis Podcast Tower, a thrashing for Elena Rybakina over the world number one, Iga Świątek. There is a lot to talk about, David.
Yeah, there is. And it actually, I think before that match took place between Świątek and Rybakina, I'd have been a little bit disappointed had you told me that Sabalenka-Świątek was not going to happen in the final, even though we saw that incredible match in the final of the Australian Open. It's just been so much at the forefront of our minds, the idea that Świątek is the best player in the world and Sabalenka is the most recent Grand Slam champion. So them clashing is something to really get excited about. Now that we're in this position and we've just seen the performance that Elena Rybakina put in, I'm now properly excited about that as a final matchup, because suddenly Sabalenka and Rybakina look in fantastic form and we know how well they gel as a final. But you're right, there's a lot to unpick, because it wasn't just about Elena Rybakina being good, and she was very, very good. That might be the best performance I think I've seen from her. Obviously, she won Wimbledon, so you've got to put that into it as well. But she was just devastating and reliable all at the same time today. But Iga Świątek has talked about having suffered a rib injury in her press conference. She talked about that. And frankly, there was a lot to worry about, because I think that would be going over the top. But there's a lot to ponder from her performance, which may well be affected by her physicality. I hadn't clocked that at the time. It didn't occur to me that she was injured, but how do I possibly know from the outside? But it was a poor performance.
Yeah, and maybe it would have been closer had she not been injured. She tells us she's injured. She obviously is injured. It fills in a bit of a blank, doesn't it, us hearing from Świątek after the match today that she has been suffering with, she called it discomfort in her rib, because yesterday when she played, there was a significant delay on her coming to press. She gave a time. That time repeatedly got pushed back, didn't it? Which generally is an indicator that sometimes if a player's lost, it can be because they're struggling to go to the loo and in an anti-doping situation, because players get tested when they lose. We have talked about going to the loo a lot on these Indian Wells podcasts, haven't we? Thank you, Daniil Medvedev. But generally in that sort of situation, it can quite often be due to a player receiving extended treatment. So it all adds up. But I wasn't watching the match thinking this is a hampered Iga Świątek, which, given the scoreline, is a bit of a surprise, really. The world number one, the dominant world number one defending champion, losing to anybody 2-2. Ordinarily, you would be starting to speculate about what could be wrong with them, I think. And yet, once the tone of this match was set, I think the tone being what it was a surprise to all of us. But once the tone of the match was set, the eventual outcome and the trajectory of the match wasn't all that surprising.
Yeah, because we've seen it before with Iga Świątek repeatedly this season, including against the same opponent in Australia. And that is that when she starts, you know, being overwhelmed on the court, being beaten, there's not much of a plan B for Iga Świątek. There's not much of an adjustment made. In fact, what she seemed to do today was try and hit the ball harder and harder, which seemed like the worst possible idea to do against Rybakina, especially in this form. Maybe that was an indicator of a bit of injury. You know, she didn't feel like she could tolerate rallies, perhaps, quite so much. But gosh, yeah, I mean, we're once again in a situation where Iga Świątek has looked imperious throughout a tournament, accelerating past opponents, having a different gear. And then as soon as she's being beaten, she doesn't have a gear. She doesn't have a way to adapt. And that has happened in, well, every tournament this year that she hasn't won. And it's yet another straight sets defeat against an opponent who can overpower her, who can take the racket out of her hand. That has been the pattern the whole season. And for me, it's a bit odd because if we go back to the US Open, Iga Świątek wasn't playing that well during that tournament. We said it the whole way through. The defining feature of Świątek at the US Open was winning when she wasn't at her best. And she talked about not liking the balls there and not liking New York conditions. And yet there was a real fight in her. There was a real willingness to adapt in matches, and it's gone a bit this season. And a lot of that, as you've said, is because of how good Rybakina was. But I still expected more from the world number one.
She's in a rush out there on the court, and I think it's become a feature of her dominance that she is no longer looking to engage in rallies. She's not looking to work a point. She's looking to end a point. And it's great to watch on one level, and it leads to these Iga's Bakeries kind of performances where she's just beating people love and one a lot. I mean, it happens so often. It's Pam Shriver said on TV the other day, it's Steffi Graf-like. And it is when she's in that sort of form. But the inability or the lack at this point in her, certainly her year, of turning those matches around when they go against her, and they go against her pretty quickly. Yeah. And who we've had, Jessica Pegula, Barbora Krejcikova, Elena Rybakina twice now. I mean, I think two or three years ago, she was talked about as a player with variety and touch. And I think she does have those things, but it's almost as though she's just put those away the last couple of years because she wanted to focus on dominating matches. And that was more like watching Caroline Garcia than it was Ash Barty today. Caroline Garcia just going for her shots and standing in on serves no matter what, how many times she's shanging the ball. And that, I find that a bit disappointing, really.
It reminded me of the Cornet match at Wimbledon, the loss to Elise Cornet, which I know felt like it had been building up. That streak was so exceptional. I don't think any of us picked her to win Wimbledon.
I did.
Okay. Well, I don't think you would have picked her against the field, would you, at Wimbledon?
No, I mean, it's, look, of all the Grand Slams, that's the one that would have been least likely, I think. But don't forget, she was on the streak then. I mean, to me, she just didn't look beatable.
But then as soon as Cornet got her teeth into that match, as she does, it was total panic from Iga Świątek. And it was, you know, what's the definition of madness? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. And it's this whole tennis player thing of where's the line? Where what's trusting your game and believing in it? And what's just madness? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome.
And I think it's a really interesting point that in the last year or so, maybe 18 months, she has opted for aggression. And now she's in a situation which is totally fascinating, where her greatest strength, that ability to dominate, that ability to smother opponents, is turning into her greatest weakness in matches when she's against a big hitter who can take the racket out of her hand. And I find that just so interesting, because she doesn't want to give that up. It's, you know, that mindset is what has brought her these extra slams. It's what brought her the 37 match winning streak. It's what made, it's what's giving her those Steffi Graf like score lines. So I can understand why she doesn't want to abandon it. There must be a part of her that thinks, I'm the best player in the world, I need to keep going for my shots, and they will start landing, and it doesn't matter who the opponent is. But there's enough evidence now to suggest that she needs a plan B.
Yeah, I mean, injury notwithstanding, and that may be a major factor in this scoreline and in this result, but I think she needs to swallow her pride a little bit when she faces an Elena Rybakina hitting the ball like that, and accept she's not going to be able to necessarily fight fire with fire and immediately hit a winner off a great, powerful shot coming away.
We're not questioning the injury. We're just saying this result doesn't exist in a vacuum. It is part of a pattern with Iga Świątek. Yeah. And, yeah, that bears analysing injury or not, quite frankly. And she was obviously fit enough to compete out there. So even if you're hampered, you can still try different things. Still tactically, you've got the capacity to try and think clearly and change things up, whether you're able to execute that or not. There didn't seem to be the intention to do that, I suppose, or certainly I didn't see any evidence of that. But Elena Rybakina, to come back to your original point, David, I don't think I have seen her put in better start to finish performance from that. And I think part of that was, I can't believe I'm saying this because it's Iga Świątek, but Iga Świątek didn't make her uncomfortable really at any point. There was one rally, wasn't there, where we said, oh, that's what she needs to be doing. She moved her
side to side.
Look, Rybakina is a better mover than you think she's going to be, because you see those big ground strokes and the big serve, and you see the size of her, and you think, you know, back in the day, she might not have been a great mover because that would have been enough. But these days, I think the game has evolved to such a stage that you can't afford to have your movement as a weakness. It can be a relative weakness, but it can't be an absolute weakness. And she moves decently, does Elena Rybakina. And so it's not just a question of, you know, getting her on the run a bit. You have to really work the angles. And there was one, two points there where she did, and it was like, okay, that's it. But wasn't able to do it consistently at all. And Rybakina just felt completely serene. Didn't feel like she was in any kind of battle out there. No questions for her to answer. The serve helps, I think, not just in reality. I think it helps mentally so much when you're playing somebody with the locker room aura that Iga Świątek has now when she steps out onto court, which of course would be diminished against someone like Rybakina, who's beaten her so recently, but still there. I think just knowing you've got that get out of jail free card up your sleeve when you're under pressure must just take a weight off your shoulders. But She was just sublime tonight, I thought. Absolutely sublime.
Yeah, and honestly, it's the type of performance that I think and I hope will make me just... I don't want to say respect Rybakina more, because I feel like I really do have respect for her. But at the start of this tournament, I was thinking Świątek or Sabalenka was going to win it. And I think I probably thought that at the start of the Australian Open as well. And, you know, she's the Wimbledon champion. She's the Australian Open finalist. She's now the Indian Wells finalist. Who knows? Maybe even she might win this tournament. It feels like everything she's doing is just elevating her in people's minds and making her more and more part of the main conversation. And a performance like that, it was outstandingly good. I mean, it was so good. She'd have beaten anyone, I think, today.
Sabalenka?
I think Rybakina played better today than Sabalenka. I do. But Sabalenka does dominate that head-to-head. Mm. She can meet power with power and turn it back on
her. Some great sounds coming from the crowd when Rybakina connected. I love that sort of gasp and the awe and, oh, you know, how she got that one back and hit it that hard. I do think she has that sort of power and ball strike. It's it goes through you, really. It makes you shudder.
Doesn't look like a slow court, does it?
No.
When Rybakina's playing.
No, I mean, yeah, Daniil Medvedev must not be liking what he's seeing tonight. You know,
acute lack of bicep.
It's really detracting from his pace, the fact that Sabalenka and Rybakina are so easily hitting through the court.
I'd quite like to...
Get back in the gym, Daniil.
I'd quite like to know whose ball goes through the air faster out of Rybakina and Medvedev's.
I think Medvedev could probably tell you the
And I would imagine it is Rybakina's, but you know, she's some player and she's getting better.
She is. It's an awesome sight when she plays like that.
Mm. So it is a replay of the Australian Open final, and that because Aryna Sabalenka got the better of Maria Sakkari in the first singles semi-final of the day. The most notable aspect of which was the ridiculous delay of 40 minutes to the match, but before it got going due to...
Now that's faff.
...a failure of the sound system. Now, I'm probably not the best person to talk about this because I was stranded live on air on court with absolutely no VTs to go to because we'd already played them all in the build-up. Because this is the thing, the players had got on the buggy, they'd made the journey to the backstage area, which is literally feet away from the court entrance. They're there, the cameras are on them, and it's at the stage where they try and play the build-up music, the bells tolling that they play before the players walk on. It was at that stage that they realised, oh, no bells are tolling. This is a bit of a problem. Should we check if Hawkeye Live's back? Oh, that's not working either. I think we might have a problem here. And then you start, the DJ starts malfunctioning and you start hearing sort of 2 second snippets of unidentifiable dance music. Then the DJ sorts himself out and starts belting out David Bowie and you think, okay, we're ready to play some tennis here. Maria Sakkari starts walking out onto court and then she has to sort of moonwalk back into the holding area because they realise actually we're not in any kind of position to start playing tennis because the umpire's microphone isn't working, the line calling system isn't working, and those two things are quite big problems. And then they think they've got it figured out. Both players do walk onto court and then there's about 25 minutes of them on the court in the pounding sunshine. And I know they had umbrellas, but it was blooming hot out there, being incredibly good-natured about this sort of indefinite delay to their match. They were sort of in this very weird nether zone of being told, you've got to stay here, but we've got absolutely no idea when we're going to be able to fix this problem.
Hmm.
that needs work for the future, doesn't it?
It was so tennis.
It was. And especially tennis now that has, you know, come to rely on the technology of the line calling system. I don't necessarily think this is an argument that we shouldn't use that technology. I still think, you know, generally it's a good thing. But I was a bit perplexed that, because at one point they started putting out chairs for line judges. There was clearly a backup line judge crew available. You met them, probably.
I met them.
Right.
I met them in the tunnel on the way off court.
It's an odd job, isn't it? Being on standby to be a line judge
in case the technology breaks. They'd been working on the junior tournament.
Okay.
But it took a while to scramble them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And actually, it is a bit of a concern because, do you literally have a squad of backups who are invariably never going to be used, and then once in a while they might be required? I mean, it's yes, they might have had the junior tournament this time, but not everywhere has a junior tournament, does it? I do think, though, in that instance, they do need to have a plan B, and I think if 10 minutes goes by with no tennis, you've got to get them on and you've got to let them do the first set, the whole thing, and just not have any interruptions, because TV can't be left hanging for 45 minutes like that.
Wholeheartedly agree, David. There was a 5-minute period of live television where the camera was tracking Greg Rozetsky jogging to the back of the court, having a chat with Andrew Krasny, the MC, to find out what was going on, because we were hearing nothing, jogging back into position and going, yeah, nothing's working. They've turned it off and on again. Let's hope that works.
Yeah, well, that's always my solution to technological issues.
I don't feel like there's a BAFTA coming my way anytime soon.
Chris Clary in the media centre was advocating for let them call their own lines, which would have been quite fun.
At that stage of proceedings, I'd have been up for anything.
Could you imagine?
But actually, that sounds really fun.
Sabalenka, Sakkari calling their own lines against each other would have been hilarious. The only one who'd be even funnier would be Ostapenko.
Yeah, I mean, it did feel like maybe Ostapenko had left a parting gift on Indian Wells and sabotaged the Hawkeye Live system.
Do we have... how much do we have to say about the match? Other than it wasn't peak Sabalenka.
I wasn't
into it.
But it
didn't need to be peak Sabalenka.
I found it a difficult match to engage with, really. I know that Sakkari got back into... Well, she got to sort of parity in the sets, and then it went away quickly. It was 6-2, 6-3, wasn't it? But at no point did I really think that Sabalenka was in any jeopardy out there. And perhaps it's, I don't know, perhaps with Sabalenka playing like this, it's just a bad matchup for Sakkari. She often looks late on the ball to me. She just seems to be having to play reactive tennis. And she is at her happiest when she's playing proactive tennis. Her kick serve doesn't seem to cause Sabalenka any issues whatsoever. And yet it does against certain players. But I was a bit disappointed in Sakkari, and I think that maybe is a bit harsh because she's had a brilliant week with all these fighting wins. But I think it's just a measure of how good Sabalenka is. She's just way better.
Mm. Yeah, it was pretty much exactly the match I was expecting. The second one, you know, second semi-final we've discussed was not. I thought the conditions there would help Świątek. That took me by surprise as soon as it started. This one didn't, because Sakkari, in her own words, hadn't played a good match all tournament, and she finally ran into someone with just way more game and someone that she couldn't scrap her way past. Even when she was a set and a break down, her sort of signature move to break back and turn the momentum of the match didn't feel like it was going to turn the momentum of the match. It felt like it would just get her back into it for a moment. Sabalenka would get herself together and go on to win, and that's exactly what she did. It was kind of impressive how Sabalenka has, like, distanced herself from someone like Sakkari. You know, it wasn't that long ago that I really would have thought of those two as pretty much on a par, you know, really coming close at slams, not being able to get over the line, being a consistent top 10 player. But Sabalenka has just zoomed ahead at the start of this year. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, I think that's enough time talking about the match now before we talk about the really big event.
I agree.
Mm. What happened after the match, Matt?
Well, I starred in Game, Set and Catch.
Involuntarily.
Starred in it.
Because Sabalenka fired one ball into the crowd, then turned to the section of the stadium that I was in, fired another one, and it was just a split-second moment where I thought, oh shit, that ball was coming straight at me. I'm sitting completely on my own in the media seats, and there's an overhang of the level above. And I
like our seats in Madison Square Garden for Harry Styles.
Exactly. Yeah, where we had to sort of crouch to see the stage. This one, I very briefly lost the ball in the overhang, and then suddenly it appeared again. I caught it, everyone. I caught the ball. Great, great moment of relief, because I'm always one of those people that judges other people for dropping the ball. And then I am alerted in three different ways to the fact that clearly I've been on the screen, because within seconds I get a text from Simon Briggs back in the UK. Well caught, Matt. About a second after that, one of our colleagues in the media centre rushes out and says, well done, Matt, I just saw you on the screen. And then a second after that, I hear banging on the glass, and it's David trying to get my attention, because he's just found out that I caught the ball as well and is trying to get a picture. And then it's just a flood of notifications on Twitter and Instagram with all of our lovely listeners alerting me to the fact that I was on telly. And then we got the news, which just tops it all off and was brilliant, that Catherine saw it live on telly as well.
Yeah, and I clocked that it was you, despite the massive glare on the monitor that I was looking at, and I just did a sort of knowing smile, and I referenced the fact that Sabalenka had managed to hit the ball all the way up to the media centre. You know, I wasn't going to mention the podcast on air while I was working for someone else, because I'm a true professional, folks.
Correct.
But then enter Greg Rosedsky. And he goes, and it was cut by your tennis podcast colleague. And then I can see the look on his face, and he's thinking, oh God, I've driven down a road and it's turned out to be a cul-de-sac.
What's his name again?
And he does know your name, but he just briefly forgot it.
Yeah, I mean, he has been known to refer to me as the main man on the tennis podcast behind David Law.
He said that to Matt's face.
That's covering all the bets, isn't it?
So yeah, you sort of got a shout out from Greg, but not.
Mm. I'll take it
anyway. And look, we've been sent the clip up to Greg's contribution, but please, anyone, if you manage to capture that moment, the footage thereof on Prime in the UK, please send us the whole clip. And what we've got so far is on Instagram. Please head there. We'll pop it on Twitter as well at Tennis Podcast. But yeah, we would love the full clip if you can spare that. Now, we are going to preview the men's singles semi-finals that we've got coming up tomorrow. But before that, I'm going to remind you about the fantastic Roland Garros ticket promotion that Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours are offering to all our listeners. All Tennis Podcast listeners can get 15% off tickets and hospitality packages from Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours to this year's French Open. And French Open tickets went on sale this week and they've all sold out. So this is one of the only ways that you can get hold of tickets if you want to go. Just go to tours4tennis.com/podcast. Tours, the number 4, tennis.com tennisbusiness.com/podcast. Then click the banner for the Roland Garros promotion and enter the special discount code for Tennis Podcast listeners, which is 15LOVE. Now bear with me while I do the disclaimer bit.
I like that bit.
Take it away.
Okay. 15LOVE coupon code is only valid on purchases for eligible 2023 Roland Garros ticket packages on www.toursfortennis.com, made between 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, March 16th, 2023, through to 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, April 9th, 2023. 15LOVE discount code is limited to one use per customer, not valid on previous purchases, and not usable with any other offer or discount. Your total savings will be revealed when you head to toursfortennis.com, add an eligible package to your cart, and enter 15LOVE at the checkout. Not valid on hotel packages or other events offered by Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours or any of its subsidiaries. For questions, please email info@toursfortennis.com.
Hey!
That was my game, set, and catch moment of the day.
That was so good. Oh, you've been spending too much time in America watching about medicines that are going to cause you all sorts of
medicines that have a sort of 40% chance of killing
with
you.
With a 6-minute disclaimer on them.
Mm. My finest work. I've peaked. I can't believe we have to carry on podding. We struggle on because tomorrow we have the women's doubles final, actually, which I just wanted to mention because I covered both women's doubles semi-finals today. Barbora Krejcikova, Katerina Siniakova winning through pretty handily against the Japanese pair of Aoyama and Shibahara. We had Krejcikova and Siniakova come over to our little Amazon set in the corner of the court after the win. They're a delight.
Aww.
I asked them, did you click instantly when you started playing doubles together? And before I'd even got the question out, Barbora Krejcikova was nodding aggressively. She said, yes, the first ball we hit together.
Wow.
As juniors. She said they were 13 years old when they first played doubles together. And she said she knew from the absolute first moment. She said we weren't mates, particularly back then. She said we've become best mates, but in terms of a doubles partnership, she absolutely knew straight away, and I just loved that from them. So they'll play in the final tomorrow against Laura Siegmund and Beatrice Haddad Maia, David.
Okay, I'll be there. What time's that?
It's at 11 a.m.
Okay, that's me.
And I know for sure that you've got golf booked for tomorrow morning.
Absolutely.
I will be there
rumbled.
because Prime Video are covering it on UK TV.
David
and Matt will be swanning around a golf club somewhere.
Yeah. Well, we can get back for that, Matt.
Can't yes. We? Yeah. We can see the...
Look, I'll let you know what happens, David.
Thanks.
We can take a Matt Futterman approach. Don't watch first sets.
Matt Futterman from the New York Times. What's his view on that?
I mean, why he just that? Doesn't watch first sets, I think.
But
because
you must have a reason.
I think there's so much tennis to watch.
And because,
a match isn't won in the first set, is
okay.
it?
Okay. All right, Matt. Okay.
Well,
he'd have saved himself a whole lot of faff with Sabalenka and Sakkari earlier on today if he skipped all of the opening proceedings.
In fact,
would have been a smart move.
It would have been worth doing that in all of Sakkari's matches this week.
Yeah. I mean, just show up for game, set, and catch.
Was the highlight.
That's where
of
the
day.
Action is.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So what about these men's semifinals that we've got tomorrow? We have Medvedev Tiafoe. And we have Alcaraz against Sinner. Now, we did a little preview of this yesterday. We won't say too much more because we've got someone very special to help us preview one of the two semifinals at least. And that's because I bring you, ladies and gentlemen, the latest edition of Doorstep by David. And Loitering on the Lawn with David.
Because no, with Law.
So, oh,
come on, Catherine.
Loiter.
You know, you did that whole disclaimer and you can't even say loitering on the lawn with Law.
I'm never going to make it take off if I can't deliver it properly, am I? Loitering on the Lawn with Law. And this one did take place on the lawn, am I right?
Next to. Very close to. But I saw on the lawn Carlos Alcaraz coming towards me and to the masses who were next to the railing, sort of leaning over with their giant tennis balls and the things they wanted him to sign, and screaming. It was honestly, you know, you two have been watching Taylor Swift bootlegged live videos all night.
Nothing bootleg about it, David.
and all the screaming that goes on. I mean, that it was a bit like that with Alcaraz.
They sort of keep the fans in a sort of pen, don't they?
Cage them off.
They sort of cage them in. It's great that they have that facility just for fans. And I know they all get selfies and autographs.
And they must all be thinking,
but
who's this tall bloke loitering around? And why has he got? Why is he not penned in?
What, him or me? Me. Oh, okay, right.
Anyway, thank goodness he's not penned in, because if he were, we wouldn't be able to bring you the brilliant content that we're about to, because Carlos Alcaraz a couple of days ago was heading off the player lawn to many cheers and whoops and hollers from the crowd, closely followed by his coach, Juan Carlos Ferrero. But his hopes of getting swiftly back to the locker room were dashed by a door-stopping David.
And door-stopping?
Here's what happened. Door-stepping. Oh, balls. Here's what happened.
It's quite a sight and a sound to hear you come off the practice court and to hear the reaction when Carlos comes out. Does it bring back any memories for you from your career? I remember a couple of scenes a little bit like that.
Yeah, of course. When I was on the top, obviously people, I think they showed me the respect and the love for the sport and to me that I, you know, they've been enjoying my games when I was there. And yeah, it was some of the memories that I have is beautiful.
What is it like for you as a coach now? Because it's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got all those years of experience under your belt. What is it like?
Yeah, of course, it's very different. Being on the chair is not the same. You feel sometimes that you cannot do maybe what you have inside that you want to teach him. But anyway, it's been a wonderful, let's say, race for the moment, because it's been everything happened so fast. But at the same time, it's been an amazing achievement for both of us, because he's my second player as a coach. So, yeah, I'm very happy the way the things are going. I think Carlos and I were living an experience that maybe we didn't think about this happened that fast, but at the same time, it's beautiful.
You said that sometimes you're not able to maybe get across things in the way that you want because it's not you doing it. You've got to get him to do it.
Exactly.
So how do you do that?
Now we have the possibility to communicate a little bit better on the court, so it's a little bit easier. But at the same time, when I'm on the chair and he doesn't do the things as I want him to do, I feel like I cannot do what I want to say to him. But at the same time, I have to let him play and grow and make mistakes and grow from these mistakes after matches. So I think we have a very good communication off the court and, of course, on the court. But as I said, it's a beautiful race that we're doing.
I remember when you joined the tour and Alex Kureccia said to me, wait till you see this guy, he's so good. When you saw Carlos for the first time, what did you think?
I think he was different. I remember when he was 12, 13, because he came to my academy to play some tournaments. At that time, you could see a boy going to the net, making some slice, making drop shots, making lobs, all together on the same point. So you could see that he was different, playing on the baseline all the time, trying to be aggressive at that age. So, yeah, definitely it was different, but until maybe I start to coach him and practice with him every day, I didn't realize how good he could be.
Yeah, I mean, we can see how good he can be, and he's obviously won the US Open. He's won all those tournaments last year, been world number one, and yet it still feels to me like he's just getting started.
Yeah.
How do you sort of hold him back, or at least make sure he doesn't hurt himself? Because I know he's had some injuries, but he seems to have such an appetite to work, to play. He seems to love it so much, but you can't play all the time.
I think it was very important this year that we've been practice, because when you get someone when he's 15, it's easier to teach all the things that he needs to be one of the best. And at the same time, I think the team, what we do around him, you know, makes him all the time stay on the ground. And also his family is they're doing a great job. They're very humble. As him, brothers, he has three more brothers. So, yeah, the family is great. Father, he played great level in Spain. So I think when he was young, he was younger, they teach him, you know, how to manage all the things that maybe he was about to come. And, yeah, obviously being famous, money, being known in everywhere, it's some of the things that you have to deal when your player is too young. But at the same time, I think the team is been doing a great job.
I imagine that's where your experience comes in from being a player. Just in terms of, I mean, his age, he's done such a lot at such a quick pace. I guess a little like Rafa did back in the day. When do you think he will peak? When do you think he will be at his best?
I don't know. It's very tough to answer that question because, as I said last year, I think he's on his 60% of his maybe top. He's still 19. It's impossible to be 100%. He needs to work in a lot of things, as I said last year. But it's almost the same as Sinner, Rune, all the young guys that they're playing at a good level. You could see that they can do the things a little bit better, maybe on the court, off the court. I don't know. I know Carlos' example, but of course, even if you are 30 or 40, like maybe it's Rafa 36, he always says that every day is a new day that you can improve. So imagine that he thinks that what we should be thinking. So, of course, to Carlos, every day I try to make him learn from the best and try to be a better player every day.
Just quickly, Carlos. There was a moment last year in Miami when you arrived late, and obviously we know the reasons for that. And we saw the video of Carlos greeting you and the happiness in his eyes. And I think people see the relationship between you, and it's heartwarming, to be honest. It's lovely to see. How would you describe the relationship between the two of you?
Like very close. I think the first thing that we are is very good friends. Now is even family for me, because we're so close, even for his family as well. And and Carlos is very close from to my family as well. So, of course, we are working together, but at the same time, it's something that it's, let's say, more special, closer. It's a different relationship. So it's nice because it's the one I had with my coach when I was working with him and still working with him. So it's nice to see that Carlos, he has his fidelity to us and likes to be with us and work with us.
60% of his full potential.
What an amazing line that is.
Still processing.
Yeah.
Still processing the implications.
Can that be real? Carlos Alcaraz, what we're seeing right now, that explosive electric player, is at 60% of what he's going to go on to be?
Well, 19-year-old Rafael Nadal was probably 60% of what he has gone on to be. And I suspect that if that had been said about him, if that projection had been made about him at the same point in his career, one would have had a similar reaction.
I think there were much more obviously limitations to his game back then.
The backhand, off clay.
Yeah, he was a particular type of player back then with things that he just covered up. And sometimes they got exposed at the US Open. Andy Roddick beat him handily, a couple of other places. And on grass, he lost to people he would never lose to later on. He developed. And look, Alcaraz, I'm sure, will develop. But, you know, you watch him up there at the moment on a hard court, on a clay court. Grass, he definitely looks as though he doesn't really know what he's doing, I would say, at the moment. But, I mean...
But I felt like I watched quite a lot of him at Wimbledon last year because I was so curious about that. And, okay, he came very much a cropper against Jannik Sinner in the end, but he learned every round. I watched him learning, you know, over the course of a week. He was figuring it out. It's obviously incredibly tough with grass because it's so few matches and such little time to figure things out, but he has it in him to do so without question. 60% though.
It's such what a thing for your coach to say publicly. I mean, somebody who's been a world number one himself, a Grand Slam champion, and to just be that confident in your player that you can put that out there.
And there's been some, their relationship, there's been some lovely, wholesome, actually quite tennis podcast-esque driving to the tennis together.
They stole our content.
Yeah.
Because
that's become a regular feature on our Instagram. David drives Catherine to work in the morning. We thought we were getting pulled over by the sheriff this morning, didn't we?
Did have my heart in my mouth.
Or a sheriff. Unclear whether there's more than one sheriff.
Someone replied on Instagram to say there's the sheriff and then people who work for the sheriff who would also have sheriff on their uniform.
Right, riding on the actual sheriff's coattails.
So it's inconclusive.
I
don't
the chances
think you
of
saw
us having
the sheriff.
Bumped into the sheriff.
At 7:30. Yeah. On a Friday morning.
We're thinking of westerns, aren't we, where there's a sheriff in a big hat.
Anyway, we saw a sheriff. and no such drama for Carlos Alcaraz and Juan Carlos Ferrero, but it just looked like good vibes in that car, didn't it? I mean, obviously he's earned it. You know, Juan Carlos Ferrero has been so instrumental in Alcaraz's development, but equally he must just think...
I've won the lottery.
Yeah. Every day you must wake up and go, yeah, this is great.
I mean, if this is 60% Alcaraz, I can't wait for 70, 80, 90, and 100. I cannot wait.
Yeah, what a prospect. Does anybody have any advances on the predictions they made yesterday for these two men's semifinals?
I said Tiafo against Alcaraz, didn't I? And no, I still feel the same. I do think Sinner can push Alcaraz to the limit again. And I ultimately think Alcaraz will prevail, but I think Sinner is seriously good and getting better.
I went back to read the transcript of Carlos Alcaraz's press conference after that match against Sinner at the US Open, which I'd actually forgotten was 5 hours and 15 minutes.
We had a fun time that night, didn't we?
Like, I knew it was long, but I'd forgotten it was over 5 hours.
We watched several sets of it in the stadium and then
went back to the hotel in the middle of the night
and watched the rest on TV.
It was madness.
High-fiving and shouting.
I had to leave before the end, didn't I?
Mm. Yeah, you were presenting live TV the next day.
That'll be a deathbed regret. Anyway, carry on. Keep it light, Matt.
What a hospital pass. Take over from deathbed regret.
It was amazing, Catherine. You really missed out.
But
I know.
The first question was, how did you feel physically? 5 hours, 15 minutes. And Alcaraz says, I felt great.
All these old hacks just sitting there with their aching backs.
Just says everything. He just seems to have boundless energy, and I cannot wait for that match tomorrow. Like, I'm excited for both. I think Tiafoe could really bring it against Medvedev, and
Medvedev could get grouchy.
Medvedev's in a weird mood, so there's potential for a lot of fun, I think, in that one. And I just think the quality of Sinner Alcaraz is gonna just blow us all away. Mm. I hope so.
They're back to back, aren't they? From 1 PM local time tomorrow, so 8 PM in the UK. Doing some on the spot maths, 4 PM Eastern time.
Correct.
Yes, well done. Whew.
Okay, there we go. I like that, them being back to back. I mean, evening session matches are great, but I think that's a cool schedule for tomorrow. Saturday, obviously, I'd expect a great crowd in. They were slightly disappointing crowds, weren't they, in today?
It's sort of a lot of people, but the stadium is so big that they can get lost a little.
And it's a Friday, not a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, really looking forward to tomorrow. Cannot wait. We'll be back with a tennis podcast, won't we?
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll also be back with a little meet and greet again tomorrow.
Yes, what time for tomorrow?
Our last one, 12:30 at the Steve Fergal booth. So half an hour before the play.
Your last chance to meet David and Matt and possibly me if I'm available. If I'm not, then I will be out and about around the grounds and frankly very easy to spot because usually trailed by sort of a sound bloke, two cameramen, several large trolleys and a slightly exasperated looking floor manager with terrible sunburn.
I feel bad for laughing.
Please do say hi if you spot me out and about, which so many of you have, and it's lovely. But also, do go to the Steve Fergal stand booth.
Yeah.
It's not a stand, is it? It's a lot more than a stand. Tomorrow at 12:30 and meet Matt and David.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And
thanks for everybody who has so far. Yeah, it's been lovely, really.
It's been amazing.
Overwhelmed with how many of you have come, with what you've said, with the warmth that you've poured on us.
Yeah.
We are not worthy, and it has been heartwarming and delightful and very motivating. Not that we needed any motivation for what we do, but you keep giving, and it's an absolute treat for us. So thank you. We also have, as a reminder, our on location competition that is open to friends of the Tennis Podcast that are resident in either the US or the UK to win that incredible prize package to come to Indian Wells next year, 2024, a 3-night stay at a 4-star hotel and tickets to all 4 semi-finals and both finals, plus hospitality, transportation to and from the venue. It is an incredible prize package. The competition is open till tomorrow evening. Is it 11:59 PM local time to us, David? Oh, I've put him on the spot.
I think it might be the day after.
Okay.
So, Yeah.
What I would suggest...
It's the final day.
What I would suggest is that you head to toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. And I'd suggest you do it quite soon, quite frankly, because the competition is closing soon.
Yeah. Make sure you're on the newsletter list so you're receiving that. Unfortunately, it is only open to US and UK residents. Not something that we can control. We don't have the legal rights to extend it beyond that in this one. We hope to in future in other opportunities that we have for prizes. But anyway, at least somebody's going to get to take advantage of this amazing prize. So yeah, go and have a look.
Go and have a look soon. toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. Tango, tango, papa.
Yes.
I'll miss saying that.
You're good at saying that, or you're good at disclaimers?
There are some phonetic alphabet. It's not phonetic, is it? What is it?
I think they do call it the phonetic alphabet, but there's nothing phonetic about it.
No, but there are some ones that I can never remember.
Yeah, I just make them up.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Like Freddie
comes up a lot.
Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awful Foxtrot when you're like on the phone to somebody about billing and you go Freddie and they chuckle.
They laugh at you. Yeah.
You often use David. Is that a bit arrogant?
Delta.
Well, yeah, I don't want to use that, do I?
You can't use your own name, David. That's appalling.
Just did 86 right. times.
Right. We will be back tomorrow evening with our next tennis podcast, so do make sure you join us then. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. Hey, we're all still in the game, aren't we?
This is exciting.
Hang on.
Well, a lot of us are.
I've lost Fiontek.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I still have Tiafoe. Okay.
For now.
Yep.
Big points on offer. Come on, Francis.
Big points. Okay.
You and me, David. We're flying.
We are absolutely flying. Sabalenka and Alcaraz for us. Oh my God, I've just seen the episode mascot. David's got Maisie. I've got Xenia. Matt's got Darwin. They're great mascots, but oh my God, Rue. Rue is owned by Erin Kaplan, who says Rue is a 7-year-old Coton de Tulia. I don't know. I don't know what one is, but...
but you want one.
Rue is 8.5 pounds, fluffy little ball of pure love and joy. Well, I can see that, Erin. Oh, my God. I know this is terrible radio.
We'll
put the picture in the podcast.
Ow!
She's really lost it.
Oh, she's looking at me. I think it's a she.
Catherine.
She's looking right into my soul.
Would you like me to just tell you what the doubles result was tonight while you carry on looking?
I think Bapana and Matt Ebden won.
They did, yeah. 7-6, 7-6 over John Isner and Jack Sock. We were watching that out of the corner of our eyes.
Back to Rue.
I wasn't doing a lot of watching.
I saw some. And they're going to play Kulhoff and Skupski in tomorrow's final.
Yeah.
So there you go. Are you okay now?
Well, just... subscribe to the newsletter and have a look at Rue, because you'd be doing yourself a favour, quite frankly. Yeah. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. You could be getting a brother or a sister soon, Billie Jean. We have our top folks and executive producers, Hannah, Jamie and Drew. And we have shout outs, Matt.
We have Elizabeth Rose Ownsworth.
Oh,
hello, Elizabeth.
Who knows where she's from? Maybe you'll tell us.
I do.
But that's a classic English name, isn't it?
Originally from England.
Right.
Hey! There
but for the past 30 years, Elizabeth says she's shared her time between Philadelphia and Paris.
Oh, the glamour.
Mm.
Like Elizabeth Mandlik.
Absolutely.
Daughter of Hannah Mandlikova.
That is very good.
Any advances?
I don't have. I can't raise you on that now.
No, we could go back down the Liz Smiley route, but
I feel like that would be.
We might end up on Elvis again.
We've covered that, yeah. Elizabeth. Thank you very much.
We've also got Katie, who says formerly Catherine with a K, and she asked, "Does that put me in the pew or in the row?"
Different pew.
Different pew.
Different pew. Yeah. But abbreviations are absolutely fine. I mean, I'm Kathy to my family, Kath to some people, Catherine to others. It's all very confusing. Mm. Anyway.
Katie is from Atlanta, Georgia, and has attended 3 of the 4 slams with just the Australian Open still to go.
Go on, Katie.
We've had a few people come to the booth, haven't we, and say they're one slam away from their career slam. Yeah. It's, I find it very exciting for them.
Me too. Mm. I would like to give a shout-out, a bonus shout-out to Brian, who came to the booth. And that is because, well, we've had a couple of Bryans, actually, and they were both great. But the one I'm thinking of does a thing at slams, which I'm obsessed with. You know how there's a challenge to go to every London Underground station in a day? Brian does that for tennis. And when he's at a slam, he tries to watch a little bit of every single match on the schedule live, which can be upwards of 70 matches.
Go on, Brian.
And he's figured out vantage points at the various slams so that he can tick off 2 or 3 courts at once. I mean, it's a level of tennis,
honestly, when
nerdery that I just aspire
when
to.
When Brian started explaining this, Matt's eyes bugged out of his head and I could see the cogs turning in his brain. So look, there could be feature, content, whatever. Cogs are turning.
Mm. What if there's a match you really, really want to watch and you can only watch 4 seconds of it?
Well, it's a sacrifice you make for your art, David, sometimes.
I would find that a struggle, David. You're right. But for content.
Carlos Alcaraz against Jannik Sinner. I'll see you.
But that wouldn't happen in the first round.
Yeah, in the first round.
I'll see you at 12:52.
You'd be missing Carlos Alcaraz, Love and Two over
Oscar Otter.
Yeah. You did Oscar. Very well there. Oscar Otter, David, lost to Jacopo Berrettini. So,
well, Rhett.
Well, yeah, sure. But
He was losing. And finally, I've taken us off-piste. Finally, we have Nancy Dorr from Toronto.
Oh, hello, Nancy.
Cue Catherine's Toronto story.
Dangled off a building in Toronto once. Absolutely shat my pants. Yeah.
Is Nancy Ritchie a tennis player?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done, me.
And this Nancy says, so happy to hear you all at Indian Wells. I discovered the podcast in 2018 when I was preparing for my first trip to Indian Wells, and I needed to learn more about the WTA Tour. I've become an all-round tennis fan because of the pod.
Oh, that's lovely.
Member of the original 9, Nancy Ritchie.
I thought absolutely. So. I'm really pleased.
Great name, Nancy. Very well done. Lovely story. Thank you for being a friend of the pod. If you'd like to get a shout-out, then become a friend of the pod at shout-out level. Intros also available. So details of how to do that are in our show notes. We'll be back tomorrow, as we told you, and we'll be back Sunday as well. And then Matt and I are off to Las Vegas to see Taylor Swift. And back to Swifty Twitter
I go.
Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.